Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. We are back with you here on Thursday, the 11th of February, 2021, here on The Punch Out. Very happy to be back with you as we always are, Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on The Punch Out. Plenty of things to talk about here today. As always, we're going to talk about the death row population in Texas may get smaller, hopefully a little bit smaller, but every little bit counts in that sort of situation. We're also going to be talking about Myanmar, where protests are continuing as the United States has unveiled sanctions. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we are going to change our attention to the issue of TikTok and its possibility of being banned or not banned by the U.S. government. Well, clearly TikTok is still operating, so you know that much. It clearly has not been banned as of yet. It's really going gangbusters. TikTok videos are everywhere, really. And it really just got me wondering, quite frankly, and I assume many of you, whatever did happen to that ban on TikTok that the U.S. government had designed to shut down the company or force the parent company of TikTok, that's ByteDance, a Chinese company, to sell to a U.S. company? Well, as new reporting from today from the Wall Street Journal details, the ban seems for now to be on hold, and perhaps on its way out completely as the Biden administration is re-examining various elements of the U.S.-China policy, as TikTok has also been having success fighting the actions taken during the Trump administration in court, in U.S. courts, that is. One thing about the whole issue that seems for certain, though, is the deal with Oracle and Walmart to buy TikTok appears dead. Some sources saying they could potentially play a role, but that seems out of the window. Late yesterday, the Biden administration moved to delay the filing due from the government in an appeal to an injunction granted in December that stated that the ban on TikTok was not legal. Let me put you like this. It didn't say it was not legal, but they granted TikTok's desire for an injunction to prove this issue. Nevertheless, the government is not dropping the issue, but the filing came after Biden appeared at the Pentagon yesterday and stated there that they were doing a broad review as it concerns how the U.S. is addressing China and national security issues in general. So they're looking at everything, but obviously this is connected. Now, the review isn't so broad that it's changing core principles now. Just want you to know that. Officials at the Pentagon and the White House were for sure at pains yesterday, including Biden himself, to note that they still see China as a threat, as the major U.S. competitor on Earth, and that they plan to orient the bulk of U.S. military forces against it. So in the other words, they're preparing more for war than for cooperation, despite the fact that even they admit most of the major global challenges like climate change can only be met through cooperation. Yet they prepare for war. However, many of Trump's individual moves to destroy Chinese companies were just so clearly lawless and based on totally false pretenses. They're just destroying companies, offering no evidence, that even those who want the U.S. and China to compete rather than cooperate thought that, some of this stuff has just gone too far. So the review does not come as a major surprise. This is something that many people expected. Now, whether they will change their decisions, that's yet to be seen. But the review, at least, expected. Now, the U.S. government and TikTok, especially in particular the Treasury Department of the U.S. government and TikTok, remain in consultation regarding how to come to some sort of solution that's acceptable to both sides. The U.S. claims that TikTok and really essentially any Chinese tech company is a security threat because the Chinese government has allegedly built in backdoors and legal mechanisms to be able to view, steal, and manipulate user data. Now, the irony there, of course, is thick and intense, given that the United States requires all tech companies to do just that. In recent years, we've seen how agencies from the NSA, DEA, and FBI have massive information dragnets that either through direct cooperation with tech and telecommunications companies, like just setting up in their offices like they did with AT&T, spying on billions of people's communications, which they do all the time as part of their bulk collection activities, or through the compulsion of an entirely secret national security court, American government is able to gain wide access to just about all communications out there. Really, just about all communications out there. And it's also worth noting, by the way, they're talking about backdoors. The U.S. government also notable for leaving backdoors open for them to exploit in other companies, which means ultimately they'll be able to spy on you, but other people will be able to come in and steal your data. So, you know, there's so many different layers to this. I mean, the FISA court itself, by the way, just want to note this, has stated multiple times that government agents, particularly with the FBI, routinely abuse their powers to spy on people. So at the very least, the U.S. allegations against China are certainly a pot calling the kettle black situation here. But the other issue is they haven't also provided any real evidence that the security concerns they raise are even warranted. And that's actually the exact matter that the Justice Department lawyers would have had to adjudicate in court next week if they had not gone forward and filed this thing late last night to delay it. And we'll see. In February, they are supposed to file it, but they may end up dropping it. But I'd say there's something to be said about that. I mean, yeah, they're reviewing it, but the fact that basically a few days before they have to go into court, they're saying, whoa, give us more time, gives you some sense that perhaps the Trump administration wasn't really about to bring a lot of evidence to the table there. So where exactly this ends, who knows? But it does seem clear at this point that the full Trump strategy to try to destroy every Chinese tech company they could, no matter what the cost and to who, may be a bridge too far for the Biden administration. Well, those are sounds of protest in Myanmar as the country continues to protest the coup of sorts that took place there last month. There's six straight days of protests now. I've seen demonstrations, some in the hundreds, some in the thousands, some larger than that, all across the country. A significant center of the protest in terms of who's participating have been civil servants, but also doctors, teachers, railway workers, other trade unions have been organizing work stoppages of various types. In some areas, police officers even appear to have abandoned their side and gone over to the side of protesters. And also today, the Biden administration unveiled new sanctions, and these sanctions are blacklisting eight individuals. That includes the defense minister and the home affairs minister. They've imposed additional sanctions on two military officials who are high up there. They've also targeted three major companies in the jade and the gem sector, big industry there in Myanmar with strong ties to the military. Now, the U.S. sanctions add another wrinkle to an already muddled situation. I mean, you know, the generals certainly have imprisoned top civilian political leaders in Myanmar, but realistically, they ultimately were already more or less in charge of what was clearly more of a coalition government between the National League for Democracy and the military clique that had ruled the country for decades, where the military had the majority of the power. I mean, it had the trappings of parliament and things, but it really was the military with, you know, a civilian adjunct there. And certainly the new open Myanmar that everyone was hailing, including Barack Obama, who traveled there after this new so-called democratic dispensation, wasn't that different from the old one. They were just Western companies coming in along with Chinese and other Asian nations that had been trading with Myanmar. In fact, the assumption of the so-called democracy really just opened up more space for the exploitation of workers and minerals by multinationals in league with companies that, again, are mainly tied to the military elite. Now, that brings us back around to sanctions, raises some important points here. Now, the U.S. celebrated Myanmar as long as in public, and they celebrated as a big success, as long as in public it appeared Aung San Suu Kyi was involved, more or less the leader. But interestingly enough, during all this time, the U.S. didn't feel the need to sanction the nation or really make much of a fuss or say much of anything at all when the National League for Democracy and the military were on the same page about pushing millions of Rohingya out of their homes in brutal actions that many have likened to genocide. And they most certainly were not going to level any sanctions on Myanmar for the low-wage, high-danger factory jobs serving many international brands, where, by the way, a strong labor movement has also emerged. Because, you know, that's why they wanted to get back into Myanmar, exactly this kind of economy. So the era of hypocrisy is real. It seems, in fact, like they are really only leveling sanctions, not because of any real violations of rights and democracy. Like I just said, they've been looking the other way on issues of so-called democracy and certainly of human rights in Myanmar quite a bit over the past few years. But either way, it obviously has another motive to it. You can see that. And what it really is about, I hate to say it, but it's obviously true, is China. Myanmar and China have close relations. China is unlikely to break its ties regardless of the political situation. So by placing sanctions on Myanmar, the U.S. is scoring some points on China. They're just saying, well, hey, look, we're the defenders of democracy. China's over there. They look like the friend of dictators. It's all PR. It's all cosmetic. And ultimately, the sanctions don't even really hurt anyone at the top of things. I mean, these aren't the strongest of sanctions anyway, by the way. They're designed to let quite a bit of business from the U.S. and other Western countries go forward. But even so, as 30 years, actually, I think a little bit more than that, of tight sanctions on Myanmar show, it's only average everyday people who really suffer from sanctions regimes. And if the tightest of tight sanctions didn't take the country down for 30 years, what are these going to do? Yet again, it shows. It's all cosmetic to look like the U.S. is for democracy and China is for dictatorship. There's no human rights reason behind these U.S. sanctions. Now, the military has shown no signs of bending, that's for sure, but the mass protest movement continues to grow. However, even a return to the pre-semi-coup status quo isn't so much a return to freedom and democracy as a modified version of a social model that prioritizes extractive profits over labor rights and ethnic chauvinism over solidarity. Certainly understandable why people are taking to the streets. The limited democratic mandate that was there certainly taken away from them. But even if they get what they want, as they say, the return of their lady, there will be a long, long way to go towards social justice in Myanmar. And it certainly seems that that isn't what is really interesting the United States and its sanctions more than getting the fig leaf put back up that Myanmar's a democracy so they can go back in and get more profits. Raymond Riles is the U.S.'s longest-serving death row prisoner. He's been on Texas death row for 45 years. Here's the thing about that, though. For years now, years, Texas has had no real plan to put him to death, yet he remains on death row. And it's important to note, when you talk about people remaining on death row, it really is solitary confinement. Anything over 15 days in solitary confinement is considered to be torture by most international authorities. Riles is considered really by all sides to not be mentally competent to be executed. It's certainly debatable if he was ever mentally competent to even stand trial, but unfortunately that issue can no longer be litigated in the ridiculous way these death row cases work. Riles, like many, was convicted in a legal climate in the 1970s, 1976 I believe to be exact, one that is only but so different now, where authorities made it as difficult as possible for juries to take into account mitigating factors in a person's life when they pass their sentence. And also many states that used a range of rules to do everything possible to basically declare anyone they want to execute mentally competent, which is technically not legal in the United States. You can't execute someone who is not mentally competent. But what that means is complex and ambiguous. And many states, including Texas, definitely Florida, for years used all sorts of dubious measures, including much flawed IQ tests. They used to call them bright line IQ tests, where they just would say, well, the IQ is X. That means that they're not mentally incompetent. So no matter what else is out there, seems good to me, execute them. But there's even more things than that. In fact, it wasn't even until 2014 that the Supreme Court established a fairly clear set of criteria about what it means to be not competent to be executed. But even in that, there is quite a bit of ambiguity. Either way, Riles' attorneys are raising another issue, in fact, and that is that The extensive evidence given since his conviction has established that Riles had serious mental health challenges. For instance, mental health experts who have examined him have said that he's not only delusional, but quote unquote, grossly psychotic. However, due to the Texas law at the time that he was sentenced, a jury could not consider any of these factors in deciding how to sentence him. And even later in the 80s, when he's doing his appeals, the same thing was happening. The Texas law that made it so you couldn't consider mitigating factors was not declared unconstitutional until 1989. So at his original trial, and when he was looking for appellate relief in the 80s, where at least his attorneys were seeking it, there was not the ability of jurors who even would have been sympathetic to the issue, if they would have been sympathetic, to even consider it. It was not allowed for them to be considered. So his lawyers are saying, you got to consider that. He was sentenced under these unconstitutional statutes. This month, they got an important person to agree with them. The Harris County District Attorney, Kim Ogg, who joined Riles' attorneys this month, as I mentioned, of course, and have filed for a new sentencing hearing so that he can be resentenced with the new evidence allowed so that all of the jurors will be able to hear all this mitigating evidence and make a decision. It's also clear that Ogg, who would be the other side there in a resentencing hearing, could decide to not even seek the death penalty in a resentencing case. And that could open up new things for Riles, perhaps maybe even to leave prison for, some sort of real health treatment, which is obviously what he needs and what he has needed for some time here. And with both sides on board, it seems relatively likely that Riles would be off of death row. So again, 45 years, America's longest serving death row prisoner, 45 years. And for many of them, they never even expected to execute him, but just left him rotting away in a cell, despite the fact that everybody knew he needed help. He needed health care, not to be locked away in some cell on death row in Texas. But nevertheless, it looks like there's a pretty good chance that he will get off, or at least get off death row, not out of prison. And that hopefully there will be a bit of a precedent set here. But that's really the question is, there are many other people all across America in a sort of situation, but there's no real mechanism to actually address it unless, like what happened with Riles, a sympathetic prosecutor takes your side. So it's a difficult situation for so many people who are here. And just another point to add to the long list of injustices in America's criminal legal system. And that's going to do it for us here today on The Punch Out. Just a quick programming note, we will not have the Freedom Side tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's Thursday, as we always do. We will be live tomorrow, Friday the 12th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at BT Newsroom for a special edition of The Freedom Side. We're going to be talking about Judas and the Black Messiah, the new movie about Fred Hampton that drops tomorrow on HBO Max. We've got Eddie Conway, the former Black Panther. We've got Rosa Clemente, who's a producer. We've on that movie. We've got Jared Ball. We got Sierra Taylor. I will be there myself. We've got folks from Good Kids, Mad City, fantastic activists out of Chicago. Sean Blackman, who's also going to be with us, one of our favorite friends here at Breakthrough News. Very happy to have him join us. So we got an action pack. We could have more people by the time it starts tomorrow. 7 p.m. Friday, we'll be talking about Judas and the Black Messiah, everything about it, at Breakthrough News, at BT Newsroom, across all your social media platforms. So that's going to do it for us here today on The Punch Out.